This is a trimmed down podcast version of Tracks of My Life from RNIB Connect Radio. Hello, I'm Toby Davey and welcome to Tracks of My Life here on RNIB Connect Radio. In Tracks of My Life, we invite a guest to select a few tracks that mean something to them and mark moments in their life. From maybe that first track they ever heard right through to one track that they would like to pass on that might give hope for the future. My guest today is broadcaster, author and climber Red Sell, who for 6 years presented Read On, the audiobook show here on RNIB Connect Radio, and can now be found presenting the AMI show, My Life in Books. Hello, Red, and welcome to Tracks of My Life here on RNIB Connect Radio.
Well, thanks for inviting me on, Toby. I've been looking forward to doing this for ages.
Red, your first track is one which is a favourite of mine, and I think many other people who might be of a similar age to us, which is Wuthering Heights by the wonderful Kate Bush. And before we talk about how Kate's debut single inspired you to the love and interest of books, I wanted to take you back to that time as a 10-year-old hearing Kate on the radio for that first time, and I wondered what early life was like for you leading up to that point.
Well, I grew up in West Sussex near Midhurst and Petworth, for anybody who knows the rolling South Downs, and we lived kind of pretty much in the middle of nowhere. I was the eldest of three children. My brother and sister were 6 and 7 years younger than me. So one of my high points every Sunday was to listen to the top 30 in our tiny, tiny little kitchen in this ancient house that was built in the 15th century with its low beams, and help my mother, in inverted commas, peel potatoes and get Sunday supper ready. And we'd be listening to all these great songs on the radio and sort of dancing around the kitchen. And I just remember this strange and ethereal and beautiful voice coming onto the radio and just stopping dead and looking at my mum and going, wow, what is this? And so we listened together and my dad was there too. And yeah, it just took me to a totally different place. And my mum explained to me that it was based on an old book called Wuthering Heights by Emily Bronte. And I went straight off to the library at school on Monday, determined that I had to find this book. And lo and behold, I did. And I read it cover to cover and fell in love with the Brontes and Kate Bush, and have loved everything that Kate Bush has produced since, and pretty much all of the Bronte books. So yeah, I just love songs that tell stories.
And when you hear the opening notes of Wuthering Heights and Kate's wonderful voice, are you taken back to those days as a 10-year-old, and is the image still sort of sharp in your mind's eye?
Yeah, very much so. As I say, you know, it was a beautiful part of the country. I kind of cursed it when I was growing up because you were so far away from friends at school and so on and so forth. But it was a beautiful, lovely place to grow up. It was a very simple upbringing. You know, spent most of my time playing in the woods or riding around on my bicycle or falling out of trees. And yeah, looking back at it, it was an idyllic childhood. You know, very loving home. My mum and dad were just great. My brother and sister were thoroughly annoying, but they were really lovely kids to play with when I was growing up. And yeah, it'll always transport me back to, you know, the 1980s in the Sussex countryside.
The wonderful Kate Bush Fair and Wuthering Heights, and I think she really started your love affair and interest in reading there, Red. We now come to the end of school days for you, Red, and I think time for you playing in a punk heavy metal band. And before we talk about the track that takes you back to those days, I wondered how you got into the band, and were you maybe the leader of the band too?
Well, yes, it was a glam thrash punk band called Dude. And I had a rather raucous 18th birthday party in a local village hall and invited lots of people along and was fronting my own four-piece band of kids I was at school with. And one of the other guys who turned up from the year below me actually kind of pulled me to one side and said, actually, you can sing and you're not afraid of standing up on stage and making an idiot of yourself. We've just sacked our lead singer and we'd really like to get you on board. And I just went, okay, fine. I wasn't getting on too well with the other guys in the band I was in. And, you know, they all wanted to play Cure covers and my hair was already down below my shoulders at this point. And I just, you know, I just really loved all that kind of rock that was coming out of LA at the time, Motley Crue and so on and so forth. And so, yeah, I thought I'll give it a go. And yeah, I joined the band. My friend Dan, who I still hang out with, was the lead guitarist. He's really quite good. And his dad was an airline pilot, long haul airline pilot, going backwards and forwards to LA all the time. And he brought back this astounding record that as soon as we put it onto the record player, it just blasted out of the speakers. And I think all five of us just stood still with our jaws hanging open going, what is this? And it was Welcome to the Jungle by Guns N' Roses. And it was just one of those life-changing events. And we sat down and we studied the notes, we studied the lyrics, we kind of, well, I guess we aped them, for want of a better word. And the fact that two of the guys still play in kind of glam thrash punk type bands like Guns N' Roses to this day probably will tell you just how much of an influence it had on all of us. And it is the record that when the five of us periodically get back together to relive past glories and forget about all the beer bottles that were thrown at us in various pubs around Aldershot, Guildford and further afield, it is the one record that we can all agree in as having had a huge influence on all of us.
And why Welcome to the Jungle and not another track from Attitude for Destruction?
It's the first track on the album. It's those opening chords that just make the hairs on the back of my neck stand up. And yeah, it's that light bulb moment.
The classic sound of Guns N' Roses there and Welcome to the Jungle, and I think a sound that sounds just as fresh now as they did back in the day. We now come to a track, Red, that marks the time for you at university in your second year when you were diagnosed with retinitis pigmentosa and told that you would probably lose your sight by the age of 30, which sounds like a real shock for somebody to be told that, and something that for me as someone who's had bad eyesight for all my life, it's something that I can't really sort of imagine. Was it a real shock for you at the time?
Yeah, I mean, it just took the world away from underneath my feet. I'd been on holiday with my mum and dad, brother and sister, to a Greek island. And in broad daylight, I walked into a concrete pillar. And once I convinced my parents that I wasn't suffering the ill effects of too much uso the night before or on something, my mum just went, that's just not right. And I'd always been short-sighted. I always had kind of bottle top glasses or contact lenses later on. But I just assumed that, as I say, I was a bit short-sighted. And Mum worked at a hospital as a medical secretary, and she got me an appointment with an ophthalmologist there, and he shone lights into the back of my eyes and went, have you ever heard of retinitis pigmentosa? And my mum and I just, no. What's that? And he said, well, it's degenerative eye disease. I'm afraid, you know, you can expect to be blind by the age of 30, and you better start adjusting your life accordingly. And yeah, I mean, after the initial shock, all I wanted to do was just go off and curl up in a corner and cry, to be honest. I think it hit my mum as hard as it hit me in many ways as well. And then we found my brother also had retinitis pigmentosa, and my sister's a carrier. And you know, I just gone to Cambridge. I had a lovely girlfriend. I hadn't been chucked out of the band yet. You know, I thought I had the world at my feet, and just to be told so brutally that my hopes and dreams were going to be blown out of the water at age 19, actually a week before my 20th birthday, just completely, as I say, took the earth from under my feet. And it wasn't easy. There was no, I didn't get any direction towards anybody who might be able to help. I was basically just shown the door and told to get on with my life. And as you can tell, I still find it quite hard to talk about. I have to remind myself that 34 years later, I've come a long way. But yeah, no, that was it was a bit of a shocker.
And during those days, you found help and support from one of your university friends, Colin Greenwood, who went on to play bass in Radiohead. How did you and Colin first sort of become friends, and how did he help and support you through those sort of dark days?
He was in the year above me studying English at the same college as I was, and he was just always a really nice guy. And there was a system whereby kind of second years would look out for first years, and we just bonded over a love of music. Funnily enough, I introduced him to the joys of Guns N' Roses, and he introduced me to bands like Husker Du and REM, and we really bonded over music. And Colin had a difficult time in his teenage years, and he is a very, very good listener. And as I kind of sat there wavering between drinking too much and smoking too much and swearing too much and feeling pretty miserable, and then just going out and having a good time, he just very calmly steered me through and listened, as I say, just listened to my woes, never offered any judgment, just told me that if you set yourself a goal and carry on walking towards it, eventually you can leave the hard, difficult, dark times behind. And for that, I am eternally grateful. He really helped me, as did a lot of my friends, but Colin's the one who, I think, in the quietest, calmest way, the way of bassists, really kind of held my hand through what was a pretty awful year.
And obviously your next track, Red, is going to be a Radiohead one. Which Radiohead track have you chosen and why?
Well, I'm going to go for The Bends, which is the title track from their second album, which I must admit actually has a very, very special place in my heart. And it captures those feelings of overwhelming distortion and nervous exhaustion, that depression and hard times that you feel with depression and really, really dark times. I know Tom York has struggled with his mental health. Tom York, the lead singer, has struggled with his mental health. And for me, I was able to see a mirror in this song. And it's also a reminder of the best gig I have ever seen in my life. And I have seen hundreds of gigs. But Radiohead live at the Brixton Academy in January 1997 just completely and utterly trumps them all. It was a band at the height of their creative powers, but it was also a band that was acknowledging that they had been through some very, very dark times, that their expectations maybe hadn't been met, that what they were achieving was in the face of adversity, and it had warped them. And I think that's kind of how I feel about my diagnosis of retinitis pigmentosa and the journey that I have had since. I need to watch myself again, to hide out of dirt and pain, cause I'd be scared that there's nothing underneath. Who are my real friends? Have they all got the bends? Am I really sinking? They're slow.
The Bends There by Radiohead, and a track and friendship that helped you read through possibly some dark times. We now come to, as the opening lines of the track says, this is the greatest and best song in the world, or it just might be just a tribute, and a classic prog rock track, which I think you and your children used to sing along to in the car on car journeys too, and also a track that marks a time when you met your wife Kate. And I wondered if you could sort of maybe go back to those times when you first met Kate, and was that a time when you had sort of maybe come to terms with your sight loss at the same time?
Coming to terms, I think, is probably the best way of putting it. I'm sure Kate would probably tell you the same. Yeah, Kate and I both absolutely love music, particularly a bit of prog rock, to be honest. And we met through a mutual friend at a gig in London. The band was called Moist. They were Canadian, they were one hit wonders, and they were pretty dreadful, to be honest. But the support band was Feeder, and our eyes met over a load of dry ice, and I think we both raised our eyebrows when Moist came on and made for the bar. And we just got chatting, and as I say, you know, we're comparing her love of early Genesis with my love of early Wishbone Ash and all the prog rock that has come thereafter. And the rest is history. That was back in 1996, I think, that we met. She would be able to give you the exact date. But we got married in 1997, and then our two daughters were born in 2000 and 2002. So while all the other parents were busily playing Harry Potter books in the car when they were, you know, dragging their kids off to see aged grandparents or whatever, we would be imbuing our children with an appreciation of progressive rock in all its lunacy, pomp and grandeur. And a particular favourite was Hocus Pocus by Focus, but I didn't really think I could inflict that on the RNIB Connect radio audience. So instead, I've gone for Tenacious D Tribute, which obviously is a huge tribute song to Stairway to Heaven and all the other kind of songs that could be B-sides to Spinal Tap songs. And it's funny. And it made us all laugh, and it made us all sing while we were sitting in traffic jams on the M25 and presumably being looked at like a bunch of loonies by all the lorry drivers around us.
And Red, I think your children are now sort of university age, and I wonder if they have fond memories of singing along to prog rock in the car.
Absolutely. And as you'll hear later, you know, we go to gigs together as family, or every so often one of my kids will just say, "Dad, so-and-so's playing in London. When I come back from university, can we go?" Which is basically code for get us a couple of tickets, Dad. And it's great. We're not great TV watchers in our family, but music is what binds us all together, I think. And, you know, it's one of the great joys of lockdown, the four of us in the house just listening to lots of music together. Look into my eyes and it's easy to see what I want, make two.
2 and 1 make 3, it was destiny. Once every 100,000 years or so, when the sun doth shine and the moon doth glow and the grass doth grow. Needless to say, the beast was stunned.
Tenacious D there, and a great prog rock track with tribute, and as you say, one that your children sing along to in the car and probably can admit to doing that as well. Red, we now have another track that tells a great story, and one that you say is the best too. And for you, what makes a great storytelling track? Is there a particular formula for it? Does there have to be a start, a middle and an end, or can it just be a story?
I think like any great short story or poem, because let's remember, you know, these songs are all just poems set to music. It's a snapshot. It's a scene from a life movie, if you like. And you know, what I love about this track is it's an unspoken dialogue between a couple who used to go out with each other but have moved on. And, you know, we can all imagine it. What happens if you bump into an ex-lover at a party? What do you say? Can you say anything? What are you thinking? And for me, there's got to be dialogue. And I think this song, you know, with a male voice and a female voice, beautifully balanced, by the way. I mean, you can imagine them together as a couple and then walking in the opposite direction. It's that dialogue, whether it's spoken or not, that just makes it leap out of the speakers or makes a short story leap out of the page. You can feel like you're a fly on the wall observing what's going on.
And I think there's a bit of an art to writing a short story, because I know you're a person who's obviously read quite a lot and has written a couple of books as well. But I think there's something that's really good about telling a story in, you know, a 4-minute song, you know, which is possibly quite difficult for some people to think about doing. But if you can do it, you can write a really good story, can't you?
Well, yeah. I mean, I've written songs. It's hard. It's really hard, because ideally, a story will twine together at least 2, maybe 3 strands of people's lives, of people's lived experiences. And that's very hard in 4.5 minutes. Short stories, I think, are probably, next to good poetry, the toughest discipline. I've never quite managed to harness that myself. I prefer longer form fiction or non-fiction. I find it easier to write. But I take my hat off to people who can write songs that tell stories such as this and Wuthering Heights. There's a real art to it. And, you know, you hear people like Lennon and McCartney or Kate Bush say, oh, you know, I just dashed it off in 5 minutes. The classic one, you know, Paul Weller with That's Entertainment apparently took him 3.5 minutes on the back of a cigarette packet. I hope he's telling the truth. I could never, ever imagine I could never imagine being able to do that myself.
So, Red, what is the track that does tell this great story?
So the track is Your Ex-Lover Is Dead. And as I say, it's about a couple, a former couple, who meet at a party and have all that awkwardness that you can imagine once you've parted and never thought that you were going to see that person again. But it also closes with a mantra, which I think we could all do well to remember. And again, maybe coming back to my loss of sight, you know, live through this and you won't look back. And we're all going to have hard times in our life. We're all going to squirm and wonder if you can ever move on. And actually keep that mantra in mind and you'll always be heading in the right direction, always be heading towards the next sunrise.
God, that was strange to see you again, introduced by a friend of a friend, smiled and said, yes, I think we've met before. In that instant it stopped.
should a taxi despite...
Stars there, and Your Ex-Lover Is Dead, and a great track that tells a great story too. We now come to a track that I think is described a little bit as a protest song by Skunk Anansie, and a band that you say, Red, sort of draws you in and then hits you with both barrels. They were obviously very different to the bands that were around in the Britpop time. And, you know, I think they were certainly doing something very different to Britpop at that time. What were you up to in the sort of 90s around that era?
I was working in the West End as a recruitment agent and also a freelance journalist on the very various diary columns for the London Evening Standard, the Daily Telegraph, the Independent. So, yeah, recruitment agent by day, journalist by night, going to an awful lot of gigs. And one of the great joys of working in the West End was I was just around the corner from Berwick Street, made famous by the cover of the second Oasis album. And I would trudge down that street every lunchtime in search of secondhand records and new CDs. And that was where I was spending all my money. And I remember walking into Sister Ray Records and hearing Skunk Anansie's first single, Selling Jesus, and just going, oh my God, that woman has a voice to die for. And she doesn't hold back on the political message either. And I just went straight up to the counter and bought it, and the second single and the third single, and Charity was one of those singles. And I love a good protest song, and a really great protest song like this is sweet and sour. You've got Skin, Deborah Dyer, the lead singer's beautiful, soulful, alluring voice pulling you close in an embrace, and then she screams the chorus in your face and makes you realise that you have really not been reading the signs properly at all. And Skunk Anansie, as you say, were doing something utterly different to Blur and Oasis. They were, you know, these weren't just good time songs. These were songs that pointed out the shortcomings of Cool Britannia and all the broken promises, and the fact that we were still living in a racially divided country where people with disabilities and mental health problems were being completely and utterly overlooked while everybody else was out partying. And I have loved Skunk Anansie since that moment in Berwick Street in 96, 97, right up to the present day. And one of the first gigs that I went to after lockdown ended with my wife and my two daughters was a kind of homecoming gig for Skunk Anansie at Brixton Academy. And dare I say it, nowadays they sound every bit as good, if not better, than they did back in the late 1990s. They've matured as a band. They are still making great music, and they still have the capacity to make me go away saying, that was a beautiful, thought-provoking punch on the nose.
And what did your kids think about it? Because obviously they weren't alive when Skunk Anansie were in the charts.
Well, they weren't. They were barely a twinkle in the eye, but they love Skunk Anansie too. They totally get it. And, well, you know, they've been properly brought up, Toby, by me and my wife. So long as it's got loud and distorted guitars in it, it's a winner.
Why do I sense benevolence? You stand tall at my great expense.
Charity by Skunk Anansie there, and a band that I think sound just as good today as they did in the 90s. Red, we now come to your final track, the one that you might like to pass on, that maybe might give people hope for the future. Red, what is the track and why have you chosen it?
The track is May You Never by John Martin. And John Martin was a deeply troubled soul himself, but he had that rare ability to be able to channel it into beautiful, soulful music and some of the most astounding guitar playing that you will ever find. I'm not very good at the guitar, but I've got a couple of friends who really are, and they both struggle to emulate John Martin's finger-picking style. This song really just says it all. You know, may you never lay your head down without a hand to hold. May you never lay your bed out in the cold. And we all need company. We all need friendship. We all need to feel loved. And sometimes you need that more than others. And I've been blessed in my life to have had very, very good friends, a loving wife and two wonderful children. And I've never had to lay my bed out in the cold. But I've had some fairly dark times in my life. And were it not for my friends and my family, I think I would have struggled a lot more. And this song is a reminder that there are some people who have to face problems by themselves. And for all the heartache that losing my eyesight caused in my life, I still have an awful lot to celebrate. And yes, it's a song of thanks and acknowledgement, really.
Well, thank you very much indeed, Red Cell, for sharing your Tracks of My Life with me here on R&IB Connect Radio.
Thank you very much for having me on the show, Toby.
May you never lay your head down without a hand to hold. May you never make your bed out in the cold. Just like a great song, brother, remind me.